The other thing is they may develop wobbliness or lameness on even just a single limb. It tends to happen in the back legs first. So any dog that comes in with back limb lameness or back leg wobbliness, if they've been to the coast, that's high up there on our list of presentations that this definitely could be a tick.
Welcome to the Positive Pet Podcast. This podcast is where pet heroes and expert advice come to life. I'm Aaron Nauta, your host, a passionate animal activist, first aid trainer, and safety coach. This podcast was created for pet owners like you, where each week we'll share heartwarming stories and essential tips to keep your pets happy, healthy, and safe. Let's embark on this positive adventure together. Today on the Positive Pet Podcast, we are joined by Dr. Julie, a seasoned vet with over 20 years of experience in emergency medicine. Now the clinical director at Canberra Veterinarian Emergency Services, Dr. Julie shares her insights on ticks, how to identify them, the risks they pose, and the best practices for prevention and treatment. Whether you're new to pet care or a seasoned pro, this episode is packed with essential information you don't want to miss. Could you tell me a little bit about your journey as a vet from the UK to Australia? And what are some challenges that you encountered while adapting to different environments and practices here?
Yes, I came to Australia 12 months ago. And the reason that I came was because of my husband's job. I've lived all over the world and I've actually lived in America. And it's actually difficult for British vets to work in America. So I was super excited to come to Australia because Australia accepts the British veterinary qualification. I was very excited about the better weather that I was going to see in Australia. But obviously with the better weather comes things that I'm not used to in the UK. I was very nervous about the snakes and also about the ticks, not nervous for myself, but how to treat the patients. Because in England, we do not have any venomous snakes and we certainly don't have any paralysis ticks either. So I was a little bit nervous about having to be able to treat those things. Typically with both of those type of patients, we sometimes have to put them on a ventilator. And so I hadn't really had that much experience with a ventilator. So I was worried not only about being able to diagnose these patients, but actually being able to treat them as well.
So, that's interesting. So qualifications then just transfer over from the UK over to Australia, which is great to hear. But obviously, those ticks and snakes, myself from Canada, I was also trying to learn or grasp that whole world when I came over here. So what ticks are a major concern for pets in Australia and what type of ticks are most common here and specific risk for those pets that people would have?
Yeah, so the most common tick is called Ioxides, and there's two species that we typically see in Australia, one of them far more than the other. And when the tick actually attaches, there typically isn't really any symptoms at that point. But you don't actually see any problems to about a week to 10 days later. And what unfortunately happens is the tick has a toxin in its saliva and that gets transferred to the patient, the dog or the cat. And then it causes symptoms, as I say, approximately a week to 10 days down the line. Here in, I'm actually living in Canberra and we are not near the coast here in Canberra. So we are quite lucky in that we will only see it in animals that have gone to the coast. But if you live near the coast, this is a day-to-day problem for you. And it's something you absolutely have to be aware of because simple things, simple prevention is much, much easier than cure.
Yeah, no, I did hear that it was near the coast because I've been down to the coast and I've actually had a tick go on my dog Cotton. And it wasn't a paralysis tick. So we actually had to bring them in and get it checked. But what would be some, like, how would you identify that they have been bitten or that they have this tick on them?
So there's a couple of things, really. When the tick first attaches, it's actually very tiny. So typically, you don't see them when they very first attach. But what they do is they suck on the blood of the patient. And so they get bigger and their belly fills up with blood. So you can see the ticks with your eyes on the patient. They are typically around the head area, but not always. And they just look like a little small lump on your pet. So lots of people do confuse them for a little lump, or even I've had people confuse them with a nipple. So they can be confused with anything, but they're, I'm trying to think what they're the size of really. They're smaller than most coins. So they're smaller than like a cent, 1 cent. But when they very first attach, they're very difficult to see. But after sucking blood for sort of 12, 24 hours, you are going to be able to see them with the naked eye. The trouble is lots of our patients have got a lot of fur. And so if you're not actually checking your pet for these ticks, you may not actually see them. So it's very important if you do live near the coast, firstly, that you use prevention for ticks, but secondly, that you are checking your animal after a walk to check that they don't have any ticks attached to them. And that can be really difficult in some of these really hairy breeds. It's actually a full-on task, really, that you really should be performing after every walk because these things are very, very dangerous.
So ideally, after you've been to the coast, is this waterways as well? Would this be considered like rivers and streams and stuff like that?
Not typically. It's typically the coast. It's the warmer, very humid weather on the coastal areas. So it's worse, really, in the more southern states. So Queensland has a bigger problem than we do, for sure. But yes, it's typically the coast that causes the problems. So you have to be really on your game when you're taking your patient to the coast, your dog to the coast. You definitely should treat them prior to going and also be checking your patient as well.
So is there a time of the year then that is also, you said, hot, like humid?
So here in Canberra, we are just starting the tick season. So it's just getting hot enough here for us to have seen our first tick patients. We saw our first tick patients last weekend. So that means they have been to the coast probably about a week previous. So here now in Canberra, it's September time. So we are seeing our first cases. And the temperature here is about 16-17, I would say. So we obviously have colder winters here in Canberra. So we don't typically see anything over the winter months. But if you're living in a more temperate climate, then you're going to potentially see them all year round. But typically when the temperature is warm and humid, it's those two things together that potentially cause more ticks to be seen.
So once you get into the 16 or 15, 16, like what you're going above that, then you might be seeing them more often. How would you, so you said you might feel them, you might start seeing them. Is there signs and symptoms that we should watch for also that they might be showing?
So when the tick first attaches, you are not going to see any symptoms. The only thing that you are going to find is this small lump on your dog's or cat's leg, which, as I say, can be very difficult to find if you've got a furry dog. Sometimes all you will see is like a little crater, so a little hole in your dog's skin where the tick did attach and has fallen off. But they can stay on there for days and days. And as I say, you really won't see any symptoms until a week to 10 days after the tick has attached to the dog or the cat. So you really won't notice anything other than this little lump, this little tick on the animal. There's no other symptoms until that toxin has started entering the bloodstream and having its effect.
And so what are some of these signs and symptoms that once the toxin does start to affect them, what do these signs and symptoms start to look like then?
So there's two sort of symptoms that we see with ticks. There are respiratory problems and by that breathing problems. And so you might notice that your dog or cat is having a little bit more difficulty breathing. They may also have a little cough, like a little wet cough as well, because sometimes these patients, they will do what we call regurgitate. So they won't actually vomit as such, but they might regurgitate a little bit into their mouths and then inhale that into their lungs. So they sometimes develop a little soft, wet cough. The other thing is they may develop wobbliness or lameness on even just a single limb. It tends to happen in the back legs first. So any dog that comes in with back limb lameness or back leg wobbliness, if they've been to the coast, that's high up there on our list of presentations that this definitely could be a tick. And if we suspect a tick, we start looking straight away. And what we typically do is we might even have to shave the patient completely to be absolutely certain that we haven't missed any ticks. Because sometimes these dogs can have more than one tick.
So what would then be, so you mentioned prevention before somebody's actually going down to the coastal areas. What are some best practices for tick prevention? What would you give us some tips? And then what would be the best removal that you recommend as well?
It's absolutely essential before you go to the coast to use tick prevention. There are a number of brands out there that you can use. But I would honestly say, and I'm not just saying this for the veterinary profession to make money, but I would definitely take advice off your vet. They are going to know the best products on the market. There's actually a new product coming out soon in Australia that will actually give you, hopefully, a years long prevention of ticks. So that's something really easy for clients to now use, that you can do it once a year and you don't have to think about it again. What we typically see here is that people forget to do the top up. So they do, if they're using a product that lasts for 3 months, they will use it at the beginning of the sort of season here in Canberra, and then they'll forget to do the second one 3 months afterwards. So that's a problem. So that will be taken away by this product that is going to last a year. But it's absolutely essential that you use a prevention tick product. That is the only way to stop your pet being bitten by these ticks.
So I might grab that product later from you, and I'll put it in the comments for everybody so that they can have a look and see if that's right for them. And that's great that they have that option now that they're coming up with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
With removal, is there something that that would be a specific tool or something that people can use to remove themselves? Or would you recommend that they just come straight to the vet and get it removed there?
Yeah, no, they don't typically need to go to the vet. There's a couple of things that you can do. You can use petroleum jelly, and you can cover it with petroleum jelly. And that means that the tick can't breathe because they respire through their skin. And so they can drop off if you cover them with petroleum jelly. You need to keep an eye on it to make sure that it has dropped off. And the other thing you can do is, there is actually a simple tool that you can buy online called a tick remover. It's just a little plastic tool with two little prongs, almost like a fork with two prongs, and you fit the tick, the portion of the tick that you can see between the prongs, and then you unwind the tick from your dog. Rather than just pulling it, it's better to unwind it. The trouble is, if you just pull a tick off, you could leave the head part in the animal. It's not the end of the world, but that could potentially cause up just a local infection, because the head parts are still in your dog's skin, and that can cause an infection. So it's better to use these little tools. And they're really reasonably priced. I shouldn't imagine them more than a few dollars. So it's something very easy that you can have with you to, once your dog's been for a walk, or your cats, you live down by the coast for the cats, outdoor cats, you can examine them and then use these little tools to take them off.
Yeah, no, that's good. I've definitely used one of the tick removers.
That's my phone. Let me just turn off.
That's good. Yeah, I've definitely used one of those tick removers, and we had that exact problem where the head just actually, like, it just came off the tick. And then we just, for safety, just brought Cotton into the vet just to make sure that it was removed completely.
The other thing is, if you see one tick, you want to look for more ticks, just in case. It's very likely that if they've got one tick, that they may have another tick. So don't just take one off and then forget about it. Have a little look around with the fur and just see if you can see any more.
Yeah, that's great. So moving on to educating pet owners, what are some common maybe misconceptions about tick prevention or treatment that you encounter in your practice, and how do you address them?
Unfortunately, I work in emergency work, and what I see is that just people forget to apply it. That is, they forget either it's the beginning of the warmer season, so they forget that they need to use it. Some people don't actually know at all that they have to use it when they go out to the coast. So we really need to educate our clients a little bit better to tell them that this is necessary. But as an emergency service, we're not seeing patients for their vaccines and things like that. It's the primary care vets that do that. People should be listening to their primary care vets. And when they say their patient, the animal needs tick prevention, it does need tick prevention, because believe me, it's terrible when these animals do get the tick paralysis.
So everybody go out and get your tick prevention treatment. Could you share a memorable case that you had in the emergency department of a tick-borne disease or something that stood out to you, and what lessons were learned from that experience?
They're typically very sad cases. If you catch it early enough, we have a good chance of success. But when the symptoms have progressed, the survival rate does become it becomes lower. So we did have a patient in this weekend, and the owners were beside themselves because they had actually forgotten to put the tick treatment on before they went to the coast. And the poor little dog presented really, we actually grade them when they come in. We grade how bad their breathing is, and we grade how bad their walking is. So this patient graded middle to high when he presented. And as I say, these patients, eventually what happens is toxin paralyzes all their muscles. So that's why it starts in the hind legs. They start getting wobbly in the hind legs, And sometimes by the time they get to us, they can't even sit up properly. They don't have the muscle tone to sit up properly. They're just lying on their side. So this dog could sit up properly, but he could not walk at all. His legs were too weak to enable him to walk. He did have a little bit of a soft cough by the time he came in. And unfortunately, he regurgitated an awful lot as an inpatient. And so he was inhaling some of that onto his lungs. So we do have an antidote that we can use for patients with tic paralysis, but it's not 100% effective. And we get it in to the patients as soon as we can, as soon as we think that we've made a diagnosis of tic paralysis. And as I say, we will sedate the animal and clip them fully, because as I say, once you've found one tick, there is the possibility of finding more. So we always have these poor patients in with no fare, not being able to walk, breathing difficultly because their muscles to breathe are not working properly, and also that they've probably inhaled some fluid into their lungs. So they're pitiful patients to see. And unfortunately, what happens is eventually, because they aren't breathing properly, because they've got that fluid in their lung, and because their muscles aren't working properly, they can stop being able to get enough oxygen into their system. And if that becomes the case, we sometimes have to put these patients on a ventilator. And the trouble with that is it's super expensive. It's really expensive to ventilate a patient. We have to put them on machines that you see humans on, the ventilator machines, and they have to be monitored minute by minute. So somebody has to sit with them all the time. And so it's very expensive. So in this particular case, which is the case with quite a lot of our animals, the owners couldn't afford to have a ventilator. So we knew that wasn't an option with this patient. But thank God, with the treatment that we gave him, the antidote and the care, they do require a lot of nursing care because they can't walk. Sometimes they can't urinate. So we have to pass urinary catheters. But thankfully, this patient pulled through. But it is very much touch and go with a lot of these patients as to whether they will pull through. And even if they do go on a ventilator, sometimes they could need to be on a ventilator for 4 or 5 days, sometimes even longer. And so it's expensive care for these patients. And when you think about how reasonably priced tick prevention is, it's much, much cheaper, like hundreds of times cheaper to use the prevention than to treat these patients, because they can be extremely expensive.
I think that I didn't realize that there was actually an antidote for ticks.
So the antiserum, what that does is any toxin that isn't already bound, it mops up that toxin. So that's all the antiserum can do, is mop up any toxin that's circulating freely in the animal's body. Any toxin that's already attached to the nerves, we can't do anything about that. And so that toxin will continue to cause paralysis of the patient, and we need to support them through that time. So the earlier the patient gets to the vets with these symptoms, the earlier we can give the tick antiserum, the more likely there's to be less of the toxin bound to the nerve endings. And so the more likely we are to have success with our patient. So as soon as you see the lameness or the wobbliness or the breathing problems, it's really important to get the patient to the vet as soon as possible, because the sooner they get there, as I say, the much more likelihood of success that we're going to have.
Awesome. And just for people who might not know, what does tick prevention medication, what does it actually do for them to protect them?
Yeah, it just stops the tick from binding and feeding off the pets. So obviously they'll still come into contact with the ticks, but they won't be able to attach fully. So they drop off very quickly. So typically you shouldn't really see any ticks on your pet if they're on tick prevention, but it's always wise to just check them after you've been on a walk to be on the safe side that you can't see any that have enlarged. These tick products now are very good. So it's rare that we see a patient that has had any form of treatment come in with a tick that's large and has sucked blood out of the patient.
So I guess, yeah. So the main advice would be prevention.
Totally.
And if you forget that, then get them to the vet as soon as possible if you notice any of that paralysis happening.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for going through all of these different things for ticks. I think that the listeners are going to get so much out of this. I got lots out of it myself, so thank you. And for those of you listening from home, please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with a friend. See you next week.